We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to the Big Blue Banter New York Giants football podcast on Locker Room, though now it's called Spotify Green Room. There have been some changes, but it's the same show it's always been, a live Q&A with everybody here. I'm going to give some people a few seconds to join. It looks like it's a different layout as well, so I'm not exactly sure, I would say, where the people are coming in from, but let's see if I can go ahead and shout this bad boy out on Twitter as well, so we can go ahead and get it there. Yes, Mike. What is going on, Mike? Thank you for saving the room here.
No problem. I missed you guys a couple weeks in a row. It's summertime down here in the South Jersey shoreline, so
nice.
It's rough.
Well, I'd like to be down in South Jersey Shore, right? Well, what's bad about that?
Nothing, man, nothing. I got a chance to listen to you guys' podcast when you guys broke down the running backs. Thought it was awesome. As always, you and Nick Filato do a wonderful job.
Thank you.
But I wonder if, like you guys were kind of opining, like, do they limit Saquon Barkley's third down role and Corey Clement being that guy that could usurp Booker, you know, maybe not the first four or five games, but probably like the next, you know, the later part of the season. Because I believe it was you. Was it you or was it Dan that mentioned like he's really, really good in pass pro and better than Barkley? Like, I guess like he had almost four times as many reps as Barkley in pass pro and let up not that many sacks. I'm just trying to remember back to the pod.
Yeah, that's exactly right. He's had more. It looks like we just lost you there. So request to speak again, Mike. It's like your connection lost or you jumped out for a minute. But what Mike was saying is, yeah, Corey Clement has been excellent in pass protection. And that brings up the conundrum of what will the Giants do at the running back position on third down. On one hand, when you take Saquon Barkley off the field for any snaps, first down, second down, third down, goal line, red zone, whatever it may be, you're not putting your best players on the field. There's no one on this roster who's anywhere close to as effective as Saquon Barkley, in a phone booth with the ball in his hands in space, creating yards after contact, creating yards before contact, and honestly running routes, though Clement is a pretty solid route runner. But I feel like Barkley's skill set gives him by far and away the highest ceiling as a route runner as well. So that's a conundrum. Do you take him off the field on third downs? Because in addition to him being the best player you could put on the field, Barkley, he's also the worst pass protector on this roster right now, most likely, with the exception of maybe Rykel Armstead, who we haven't seen do it. Corey Clement has proven a lot more, and the stats back it up. He's a much better pass protector than Barkley. Barkley had major issues in pass protection in 2019, and they cropped up again in that Steelers game, as Nick was breaking down on the Running Back podcast. It didn't look like there was improvement there. It might be a mental issue. I don't think it's a physical issue or a desire issue, though ultimately a lot of the time pass protection is. But there seemed to be a lot of miscommunications with him and Andrew Thomas, specifically with pass blocking Bud Dupree in that Steelers game week one. And so it just remains to be seen. It just, we don't know exactly if he can take that step forward without having, you know, played all of last season. So ultimately, it's the decision they're going to have to make, excuse me, this season. Like, do they want to take Barkley off the field and take by far and away one of their best players on the field at all times off the field? Or do they want to keep him on and go through the growing pains of him potentially giving up blown pass protections that lead to sacks? And we'll have to see what happens there. But Mike, looks like you had to update the app, but you're back. So feel free to join back in if you had any other questions. If anyone else wants to talk Giants as well, just hit request to speak and I'll get you in. Mike is jumping back in right now. What's going on, Mike?
Hey, sorry about that.
All good.
Hit me off. So I was just saying about Corey Clement and Pass Pro. If you had to put a projection on the wide receiver group, obviously Galladay, Shep, Slayton, those three guys are locks. But do you think that they'll keep five or possibly six? And if so, Tony too as well. Sorry, I forgot TNT. He's probably a lock too. Who would you expect to round out that last body or last two bodies, on the team in that room?
It's really interesting, Mike, because ultimately it might come down to special teams, but I'm not so sure because I still feel like even after drafting Kadarius Toney, and you'll see this on a few of his reps at Florida where he catches a deep ball and he just doesn't have the deep speed to turn it into a touchdown. Now that's fine. He turns it into, a short, a 60-70 yard gain close to a touchdown, but there's times where he just doesn't turn it into a touchdown. And I still feel like John Ross actually has that seam splitting speed, that knife in the defense. And that doesn't mean you keep John Ross on the roster because you think he can become this amazing deep threat as a receiver. What it means is you think he can help your scheme. You think he can open things up. If you have him running vertical routes, it requires safety attention. And that opens up the middle of the field for players like Kenny Galladay and Evan Ingram, hopefully, or, you expect potentially. That's kind of been what Andy Reid's been doing for a long time, and Sean Payton as well. Payton's been doing it with lesser names like Devery Henderson to kind of open up the defense, and Reid's been doing it with guys like Tyreek Hill, who can actually get the ball sometimes on those vertical routes. But if you wonder why Travis Kelce has been literally almost unguardable now for, 2-3 years, it's because he has Tyreek Hill on the roster. So I think Ross is going to make the roster. That would be my bet. He would be one of those back-end guys. And then other than that, it comes down to what they think they can get from special teams from the rest of the roster. Because for me, I would give those spots to Ross and Pettis because I believe Pettis is just a good depth guy to have on there. He's already proven at the end of last season he can contribute as a receiver if needed. Not the best special teams player, but has returned punts in his past, especially at the collegiate level. So those would be my two guys that I would be looking toward.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, Dan.
All right, thanks for joining us, Mike. And it looks like we got another speaker request. It's John. What's up, John? How you doing, my friend?
What's up? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, bro. How's it going?
It's going pretty well. I have an offensive line question.
Sounds good. Where's that? By the way, where's that profile picture at?
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ever heard of the Art Tech House in New York?
I actually have not. Where is that?
It's, you know where that is? I'm sitting next to my girlfriend who went to it. Where's the Art Tech House? Manhattan. She said somewhere in Manhattan, I think. It's pretty cool. It's like a tech light show type of place.
That's pretty cool. That tech looks awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I think they have a better, like, bigger one in Washington. This one was just one room, but I mean, it was all right. Only like $10.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
But as far as the offensive line goes, so it's kind of dependent on a lot of people progressing. We don't really have any proven players. So let's just assume Andrew Thomas plays the same way he played at the end of last season. Nick Gates holds up the same way he held up last season. And Will Hernandez is just average. And then out of Pert and Lemieux, one of them takes a step forward to, let's say, become just an average offensive lineman. A lot of times, at least lately, I've been hearing people say your worst lineman is like more important than your best. Like, it's just more important to have people that are good across the board than to have one dominant person. So do you think that one weak link would potentially negate all the other progression that everybody else could take?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, you have been hearing that a lot lately, that it's better to not have the elite guys. It's better to have no one on that line who's terrible. And I think at times the Giants were a decent example of that, because for a large portion of that second half, Shane Lemieux was so bad in pass protection that it was derailing drives, and it was hurting what they wanted to accomplish in pass protection. And it's not like the opposite was true, you know, for a team. Giants wouldn't be a good example. I was trying to think if there's any example, but no one really had any stretches of elite play on that line. Andrew Thomas played better in the second half. I would not say he was anywhere near elite. Nick Gates is a solid center. He was nowhere near elite at any point. And obviously, you know the deal with the rest of them. So you're right. I think that, you know, they need to – the goal here is to – And the good news is, at least the very least, there's going to be more continuity on this line, I think, with the exception of Will Hernandez moving to right guard. They're going to be returning most of the guys. I mean, you don't lose much by moving on from Fleming to Parrott. And I would say, out of this entire roster, if you're looking for like that elite step forward, Parrott is the best guess by far, after Andrew Thomas, of course. But those are the two guys that can change the whole line, in my opinion. They do have that kind of upside, specifically Thomas, in my mind, because I really like what I saw from him toward the end of the season. I don't think he was playing elite ball, but I feel like he was playing that next level. And I just think, based on his pedigree and his work ethic and the fact that he was playing through an injury, there is still that, you can still tap into that with him. And as far as Parrott goes, it's like, I wouldn't say he has elite upside for sure, but that's what the point, when you drafted a guy like Parrott, you're drafting a project player. You weren't drafting somebody who was 6'2", like Isaiah Wynn was when the Patriots drafted him, and they thought he could just kind of slide in there at left tackle, but they didn't really see a huge ceiling. The ceiling's there for Parrott. You can see it just based on the way he moves and his body type and the length that he has. But it's just a matter of how long is that going to take. Some people around the Giants feel like that could just snap their fingers and it's going to happen right away. But he didn't get many reps last season. He started as a project. So to me, I still see a huge kind of, I guess, variance with Parrott. I don't know if I'm answering your question. I feel like I'm talking a lot about the lineman, but I'm not exactly answering your question. What, John, what's the specific question I can dive into?
The question is, like, what's the likelihood? Like, what's the likelihood that one guy's pitfall kind of just, you know what I mean, makes everything else irrelevant?
I mean, if I'm going to be honest with you, I know some Giants podcasts and Giants content people will never say something like this. It's all roses all the time. I really don't know why, because they've won no games in the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. But I'll be realist. I'll be a realist with you, John. There's a good chance it happens. I mean, Shane Lemieux was a fifth-round pick. There's a lot of people who I've talked to who know offensive line play a lot better than me that say this isn't an issue of he could practice and he could learn to get better. This is an issue of lower body flexibility and lower body kind of lateral agility, and he may never be able to be a good pass protector. That's what I've heard from people. And now maybe you say, okay, he struggles, you put in Zach Fulton. Well, Zach Fulton allowed 10 sacks last year. I know he was better the 2 years before that, but that's another risk. So I would say I'd probably put it at 35-40%, but the reason it's even that low and not higher than that is not even my faith in somebody like Lemieux, because that would be the weak link, I think, if it were to happen, him or Parrott. And because to me, it's like, as far as Will Hernandez goes, you're going to get pretty average play regardless there. I feel like there's a high floor there, or a high-ish floor, I should say. Mm-hmm. But I do still believe what I said on one of the recent podcasts. You can make up for offensive line play with really good coaching. Sean McVay has not had a good offensive line there for a really long time in Los Angeles with the Rams. I mean, there have been past 2 years, I've been like, this offensive line is going to derail the Rams offense. This offensive line. And yet with Jared Goff, who's a below average quarterback or at best average, they've continued to be a solid offensive team. And their offensive line, really, with the exception of Whitworth, doesn't have that many great players on it. And I know we just talked about your weakest player, but there were a lot of guys going into last season. You were like, this guy shouldn't be starting on any NFL roster, let alone on the Rams. And so I do think you can hide it with scheme and with really good coaching and coordinating and kind of take the onus off the offensive line. I don't think that's what the Giants ran last year. The Giants ran an offense that put a lot of onus on the offensive line, specifically in the run game. So we'll just have to see if they have anything in store there, if they mix it up there and change things offensively. This offense could change dramatically. It should change dramatically with a player like Tony and a player like Galladay added to the mix. We'll see if they can do it. We'll see if Garrett has that in him. But that would be my best solution, I think, for kind of masking some of that offensive line play.
And just one quick question stemming off that.
Yeah, go for it.
Personally, I think it's more likely Daniel Jones takes a step forward than the offensive line does, even though obviously the two are connected. So, like, during his, I guess, his elite years, and I'm not comparing Daniel Jones to Eli in any way, but he was able to succeed without a good offensive line. What's, like, the minimum leap you think Daniel Jones would have to take to be able to perform well without the offensive line? You know what I mean?
It's a great question, John. And I think the crazy thing with Jones, it's such a different career trajectory than Eli, because by this point with Eli, I guess entering year three, he had already had that Denver game in 05, which was year mm-hmm. two, the game where he, you know, led an 80-yard comeback touchdown drive, one where he was about to get sacked, spun out, rolled out to his left like Russell Wilson, and threw a ball on a comeback route. It was just pure arm talent. And then by the goal line, he's backing up 10 steps and rips a ball on a crosser to Toomer for the touchdown. I mean, you knew it then. You haven't had that moment yet with Jones. Some people point to his first game ever against the Bucs. I don't think so. No one had seen him yet on film. Harder to game plan against. Some people point to that Washington game late in his rookie season. I don't really think so there either. That Washington defense, when you watch the All-22, was not really playing at a high level. They kind of given up on their season. The season was way long over. And you could just sometimes tell with these NFL players where it's like the games that matter and the games that don't late in the season when a team's like 2-10. So I still think he needs that moment, but it's different because with Jones, there have been a lot of flashes. Like, Eli didn't even, besides that Broncos game in 05, Eli didn't have that many flashes in his first two seasons, at least not as many as Jones has had from just a pure talent standpoint. Big-time plays, big-time throws Jones has made, specifically slot verticals up the seam and what he's been able to do with his legs at times. So I agree with you. I think there's a good chance that Jones takes a step rather than the offensive line, and he can kind of negate the impact of the offensive line. But he's really got to put it all together, man. Like, Jones, for me, it's not an issue of talent in any way. It's just it's all mental with Jones. He has slow eyes at Duke, and it seems to me like he's had really slow eyes so far in the NFL. Hopefully that changes. Hopefully that improves. That's not a guarantee, though. It's not like we're talking about lower body mechanics or footwork or arm mechanics. You know, it's something else, and it's gotta improve. But I'm just not sold just yet that it will improve, I guess.
Gotcha. All right, that's all.
Thanks for joining, man. It was fun talking.
No problem. Appreciate it.
Hopefully see you soon, man. Have a good one.
You too.
All right, Kenneth Miller's next on the list. What is going on, Kenneth Miller? How you doing, my friend?
Hey, man. How you doing?
What's up? Pretty good.
I was going to ask about the Giants' defense, specifically at the end of the year. They were one of the better units in the NFL, and I know a lot of people haven't really been talking about the Giants' D. Do you think this could be a top 10 unit in the NFL next season?
Oh, I'm big on the Giants' defense, Kenneth. I think that's a great question. I think if the Giants are going to be the 10 or 11 win team that I think they can be, I'm very optimistic about them this year. And as Nick has can attest to, he's not here tonight, but as Nick has before and can attest to, I'm not the most optimistic, I guess, and I find that to be bullshit, by the way. Just a quick aside, I personally find that to be bullshit, not from Nick, but just from anyone who would say that, because I consider it realism. Some people consider it pessimism, whatever, potatoes, potatoes. But the reason why I'm optimistic is because of that defense. I think they can be very similar to what the Browns were last season. And the Browns kind of tailed off a bit on defense, but so it's not the best example. But I think they can be a team that has a top 10 defense, because my belief here, Kenneth, is that NFL defenses, the way they move, the way the game has moved with the rules and the changes that have been made, it is a lot more important to have pass coverage than it is to have pass rush. I think the ball's getting out in under 2.5 seconds on almost every offense. Well, even the ones that attack vertically, they're getting rid of the football quick, and they're, you know, using half field, high low reads, get rid of the ball quick. And so it's really more important to have guys who can cover in man coverage for a long period of time. The Giants have added a lot of bodies to be able to do that just by drafting Aaron Robinson and Adoree Jackson, signing Adoree Jackson alone, they've improved their secondary. Then you also consider them bringing in Xavier McKinney for a full season, plus bringing back Peppers, Ryan, obviously James Bradbury and Darnay Holmes. It's one of the deepest secondaries in the NFL. And it's kind of just a bonus to me what they get out of Azeez Ojulari and that pass rush, considering maybe Lorenzo Carter comes back and returns to himself, Ellerson Smith, players like that. So I think you're right. I think this defense steps forward, top 10 unit for sure this year for me. And I wouldn't be as confident if Patrick Graham wasn't the defensive coordinator. But the fact that he is just kind of locks it in for me. And I think it's going to be the lifeblood of this team. If they're winning a lot of football games, it will be because of the defense.
Absolutely see it. I actually love y'all defensive coordinator. But I was also thinking about James Bradbury, because last year really was his breakout season. A lot of people, I know people were talking about all pro, but still made a Pro Bowl, had a great year. Do you think he can be one of those lockdown corners that really the Giants have been missing since the, what was it, 11-5 season a couple years ago?
Yeah, in 2016. That was their last winning season. Yep. It's going to be interesting with Bradbury, because everything we've seen this offseason has been, you know, a steady drumbeat toward the Giants using more man coverage in 2021. In 2020, they tried to use man coverage in week one. It was a disaster. They tried it a little more in week two. It was an equal disaster. And so they said, let's go away from this. We don't have the dogs to do it. We don't have a second corner who's able to do it. And let's play a lot of zone. And they played a little more man toward the end of the year. But the point is, Bradbury was really, really efficient in zone, but everything they've done this offseason suggests they want to play a lot more man coverage. It was even confirmed by Patrick Graham, their defensive coordinator, during the minicamp, where he's like, this is a league where you have to be able to play man coverage if you want to win consistently on the defensive side of the ball. And I do honestly believe that Bradbury is a much better corner in zone than he is in man. That doesn't mean he can't play man, but I think it fits his skill set better. So I'll be interested to see if they play some kind of hybrid defense where Bradbury's still playing a little bit more of a zone role. It's just something I'll be tracking, I guess, during training camp and then into the season. But there's no reason for me to not believe that he can be just as good now that, you know, he's gonna have a better player on the opposite side of him in Adoree Jackson than he had, a much better player. He's gonna have more health at the safety and better talent with McKinney returning, and potentially better. It should be better pass rushers with Azeez Ojulari, Ellerson Smith, even if Lorenzo Carter doesn't come back. I mean, by the end of the season, the Giants were trotting out like Carter Coughlin and David Mayo off the edge. So it can't get much worse than that from a pass rush standpoint off the edge. So, yeah, I think this is the season where Pease finally gets the recognition for how good of a player he is.
And at least the last question I have, and I apologize if the person beforehand said this, but like, what role do you think Saquon needs to have, assuming health, of course, what role does Saquon need to have to make sure the Giants' offense is at least average as a unit?
Yeah, I mean, if you ask me, I just don't think Saquon's the biggest factor in getting them league average. You're talking about as an offense, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, I just don't think Saquon's the guy to do that. I mean, they were 31st in offense last year. They should have been 32nd. The only reason they were 31st is because Adam Gase was still in the NFL coaching an offense. Otherwise, they would have been the dead last worst offense in the NFL. Some of their metrics, advanced metrics, are just putrid. And a lot of that was coaching. If you look at what we do here on the Big Blue Banner podcast, we break down the All-22 film every week, spend hours doing it, and then we do a podcast on it. And a lot of the passing concepts that Jason Garrett used were just not being used by the best offenses in the NFL. They were breaking back toward the quarterback. They were a lot of spacing routes with four curls to the sticks. And he wasn't really stacking receivers and using motion, pre-snap motion. So to me, the bigger fact, there's three main factors to get this Giants offense to league average or better. One, Jason Garrett has to coach a much better offense. And that's the number one thing for me. Two, Daniel Jones has to be a lot better. He just has to be a lot better. There's a lot of Giants fans who think he's been good or okay so far. It's not the reality. In our Giants bubble, it seems like he's been okay. And again, he's had flashes of talent. But if you look at it, he's not producing many yards through the air as a thrower. And he's not cashing in the red zone. And that's really what matters as a quarterback. And the third main factor is the offensive line. But I think the first two are the coaching and the quarterback. So Saquon will help for sure. But I just I'm not so sure he's a main factor in that.
All right, that's all the questions I got. So you can talk to someone else if you want. Thank you.
Yo, thanks for joining, Kenneth. That was awesome. I really appreciate it. Oh, look who we got next. Nick Filato with a special guest appearance.
Yo, what's up, man? You got me on here?
How you doing?
Dude, I'm chilling. Have you guys been talking about sour cream or anything like that?
No, there's been no food talk. Disappoint. I really want to dive into a lot of my food takes, but no one really cares about my food takes, I've learned. I've tried to like hint that I want to talk food, and nobody ever brings it up. Nobody ever cares. All I want to do is talk about my correct food takes, and I never get the opportunity to, unfortunately.
You know what? That is really unfortunate, man, because I want to hear about your food takes. It's not like I ever hear about them any other time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and it's the only way for you to kind of enjoy those types of foods, you know, because we know you're not going to eat them and consume them. So
nah, at least if you why would I do that? Them, why would I enjoy my No, it's good. I just wanted to pop on and say hello.
All right. Good to see you, man. I'll talk to you later, bro.
Hold it down, brother. Take care.
Will do. All right. Another speaker. We got Notorious V.I.G. in the mix. What's going on, my friend? Are you there, Notorious V.I.G.? My friend, are you there?
I am there.
Oh, what's going on?
Well, am I the only one that goes completely blank when it's my turn? I gotta get a new phone.
There is some kind of technical difficulties on your end, Piers.
Definitely. All right. So, post June 1 cuts, where are they? There's nothing out there.
There has been nothing out there. That's actually an excellent question. Why haven't we seen that this offseason? It is interesting. They might happen later and be reported. I don't know these details enough. I should know them, but I don't, and I'm no longer working on the NFL side at CBS, so I don't feel as bad not knowing them. But I think you can cut a player and then report it as a post June 1 cut, so I still think that's in play, but I'm not positive on that, so don't quote me on that. So we might hear about them later.
Well, you were always on top of all the kind of salary cap stuff for, you know, I mean, was there anyone on your sort of wish list if they came off these post June 1 cuts?
So for me, it's like the roster's insanely deep at a lot of positions, with the exception at this point of offensive line, and that's really not even at tackle, because they've kind of made their bed there. They're gonna have Solder as that swing tackle, and they're paying him enough to the point where there's no one that makes sense to bring in. And so you look at guard, that would be the position where you look for a post June 1 cut, but I just don't think they're moving in that direction, because anyone you sign, like a veteran like that, he's not going to sign a deal unless he's kind of guaranteed he's going to get first crack at that starter spot. And that's not what the Giants can offer right now. At least in their mind, they're not offering that. They're giving those cracks to Will Hernandez and to Shane Lemieux, and they already signed Zach Fulton to the roster. So he would then have to go, or he would have to get moved on from. So, or, you know, maybe Hernandez potentially, but I don't see that happening. So it just seems like it's not in the mix this year. Normally, I think you'd see it more at, like, they've done it a lot in the past in the secondary, safety and corner, but those positions are so loaded now depth-wise, I don't see it happening there either. So the only position I see it potentially happening at is guard, and I don't know what they can offer a veteran right now, since that it looks like they really want to move forward with Hernandez and Lemieux.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we could use another safety.
I mean, where's he going? Who's going to move off the roster? Love, you would move on from.
I'm kidding.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. All right. Good stuff, man.
Awesome. Good to hear from you, bro.
Ciao.
Alrighty. That is all the speakers we have for today, and all the time we have for today. Thank you to everyone joining. This was a fun locker room. I will see you next week, normal time, Tuesday. Have a good night, and talk to you guys later.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.